Jack Rice is our expert in international affairs and our intelligence agencies. He's kind enough to join us today. JackRice.net, JackRice.net for all your Jack Rice needs. Hey, Jack, good to have you in Minnesota. You're heading back out on the road here before too long, right?
Yes, this one's going to be really interesting. I'm going to be working my way into the caucuses. So I'm going to be in Tbilisi in Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, and in the outskirts. I might head over into Azerbaijan a little bit too to work on a couple of other things. So it's going to be an interesting trip.
I've heard that that is actually kind of one of those surprising areas. And I know you're not doing a touristy thing, but I've heard from a lot of people that those areas are actually a lot of fun to go to.
Well, there's one aspect of Georgia in particular that I'm actually very interested in, and that they've been growing wine in Georgia for 2,000 years. Mm. And they actually make wine in a way that's different than almost anybody in the world, and that's they essentially ferment it in the ground. And strangely, while I am working, and I will be working, I will be doing a little quality control along the way.
I will definitely want to hear about that when you get back. I want to. That sounds fascinating, actually.
Yeah, it really is going to be fun. I mean, it's a really interesting place for a lot of different reasons, because if you look at the Caucasus and Georgia in particular, you can go all the way back really for more than a thousand years. And in fact, what you know about the Georgians is that at a certain point, they were controlled by the Persians. And so mm-hmm. they were dominated by the Persians themselves. And then what happened is about 1800, the Russians came in and they started to fight back and forth until the Russians really took control. And they held them until 1991. So really, they are only emerging right now. And they're still trying to develop where they're going. And that's a big piece of why I'm actually going to be in the region.
Speaking of fermenting in the ground, let's talk about Trump. I have to go to you because there's a story of the South Korean, and I think that this is truly just a mulligan. The South Korean president is saying that Trump deserves some, you know, consideration from the Nobel Peace Prize for the discussions on the Korean Peninsula. If I'm not mistaken, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, because it seems like the only thing that Trump has done, I mean, Pompeo went over there for about a 15-minute visit with Kim Jong-un, apparently. But that was it. I mean, Mike Pence was at the opening ceremonies of the Olympics and would refuse to even shake the hands of the North Koreans. If you're going to give Trump credit for anything, it's that he proved to be crazier than Kim Jong-un. And everyone else said, well, I thought he was nuts, but look at the guy across the ocean. Let's work together and stop this. Am I missing something here? Because it sure seems this was pretty much all done by the South Koreans, North Koreans, and the Chinese.
Yeah, well, frankly, it's a bit premature at this point for a lot of reasons. In fact, you can go back and you remember the Republicans really going after Obama when he was running, basically saying, look, I'll talk to anybody. I'll sit down with anybody. That's going to be the Syrians, the Iranians, or anybody else. And in fact, that was one of the reasons that people were looking at Obama for the Nobel Prize, because of this idea of saying, look, we need to open up, reconsider where we're going. And the amount of abuse that was heaped upon him by the Republicans, the GOP in general, because of his willingness to do that. So it's interesting to me that what you're seeing now are the people carrying President Trump on their shoulders and talking about how much of a visionary he is and his willingness to sit down with Kim Jong-un. So it's sort of interesting when you say that, but it is a very premature fact, because the real question right now is twofold. The one on whether or not we're actually looking at truly the end of the war between the North and the South, but most importantly, from the perspective of the West and the United States, whether or not there really is a question of denuclearization. And frankly, and this is true, there really is not. Not at this point. So the Americans can pound the drum all they want. But at this point, Kim Jong-un has not said he's willing to destroy one nuclear device, not one.
Am I crazy? Has there been?
Yes, you are.
Well, of course. Yeah. Has there been more discussions here? I mean, we know about the Pompeo. And once again, Mike Pompeo meets with him pre-Secretary of State. Trump's blabbing about it all the time. I don't think the guy could keep a secret to save himself. But I'm wondering, was Tillerson over there meeting? Have there been larger conversations between Trump and Kim Jong-un directly? Because it sure seems like most of this, I mean, the vast majority of this discussion has come from the South Korean president, Kim Jong-un, and the Chinese. I mean, is there something I'm missing here? Has there been other diplomatic efforts there that we're just not hearing about?
No, there really hasn't been, not from this president. You could go back much further. Frankly, you want really deep discussions about this issue. You basically have to go back before President Obama. The ones who really were working on this issue and were thinking they could get very close to this was President Bush. But in fact, you can go back to 2003, 4, 5, 6. And there was a time period when they thought they were getting close, and then the death of his father, that was part of the problem in that particular case. At this point, there really isn't. But I think the real problem that we're seeing right now is the way the president is sort of using this on his bully pulpit, is that it's nothing more than the patina that you would see on the copper dome of the basilica. Not the copper underneath it, just the patina itself. It's very little to nothing, with no structure, with no support. It's just the perception that something might be, not that something actually is. Mm-hmm. And I think what's most important is that we have to make a determination and an understanding about what we actually have, what we can actually do. And we haven't done that at all.
I mean, he still has yet to, they haven't even decided where they're going to plan on meeting, either late May or early June. Yesterday, John Bolton went out and said that he wanted to hold North Korea to the Libyan standard of denuclearization. And if you don't know, that ended up basically being, Muammar Gaddafi basically ended up getting killed with that standard being put in place. So it's a standard that basically also seems to encourage an overthrow of the current governmental regime, which North Korea clearly is not going to go along with that standard. Now, was the entire comment, do you think that the comments by the South Korean president about Trump and Nobel Peace Prizes was just a basic, accolade to try to pull back on Bolton's argument that we need to put in incredibly stringent standards, which are going to end in regime change, for us to agree to a denuclearized Korean peninsula?
Yes.
Okay.
We can look at what President Moon was doing when he was running for office, and what his party has been talking about since before he was president, is this idea of reaching out to the North, this idea of peace on the Korean Peninsula. And from his perspective, to simply throw this bone out there to the president, I think is irrelevant from the perspective of the North and the South Koreans. It's about what they're trying to do, and they've been working very, very hard on this issue. But, Matt, one of the problems that we're seeing right now is this really is putting the proverbial cart before the horse. Because one of the things we have seen when you do negotiations on the world stage is this, is you have to have some sort of a structure in place, meaning what is it that you're trying to accomplish? What is it that the other side is trying to accomplish? What is it that you want to do, what the other side wants to do? Who actually has control of it? Who can actually make it happen, et cetera, et cetera? So the purpose is generally to set these processes in motion, so by the time you get two of the biggest egos on the planet, meaning Kim Jong-un on one side and President Trump on the other, to actually sit down at a table, they essentially slide two pieces of paper at both of them. Everybody knows what's going to happen. Everybody knows where it's going. And what they do is they have a really nice photo op.
Yeah.
We have nothing at this point.
Well, and I think that seems to make the most sense. I mean, clearly a lot of the negotiations, and I think the Olympics was a really great, I mean, this is one of the proofs that the Olympics actually can do some good, that the Olympics was a really great olive branch, and it worked. The two countries worked together. The idea that we could end up actually seeing the end of the conflict and we could actually see a denuclearized Korea is a good thing. That's undeniable. It's just Trump is here, and he's so freaking desperate for a win that, as you're saying, it seems like the South Korean president, and I imagine the Chinese are going to get involved in this too, are just, what can we do? What shiny object can we throw in front of Trump to keep him on board and doing what we want to do? And that's going to be, we're going to get all the all the stuff hammered down there. We'll give him all the credit, but at the end of the day, this is going to be done by the North Koreans, South Koreans, and the Chinese.
Well, that's true. And in fact, if you look at the agreement that was really in place in the past, you need to look at all the players. So we can look back at not just the armistice from 1953, but really the major players in the room now. So it's not just the North Koreans and South Koreans, as well as the Chinese. Frankly, the Japanese play a massive role when it comes to this issue. And even to some degree, so do the Russians. And so all of those players, as well as the United States, have to play a role. But I think when you look at what John Bolton, the National Security Advisor, and this really driving force behind the president, when he talks about this concept of the Libyan model. Here was that concept, just so people are clear on it, that what it was really about was trying to negotiate with Muammar Gaddafi, throwing as much as you could at him to motivate him to give up his nuclear weapons. The problem was this, is they made a lot of promises to Muammar Gaddafi. Muammar Gaddafi bit. Then what happened is he was embraced and brought in onto the world stage. And as soon as that happened, the entire West pivoted on him, supported his enemies, who then went in and chased him out of power and killed him in a ditch. And the problem is we can look at where we are right now, and in the middle of that fight, where we have President Trump also saying that he wants to pull out of the Iranian nuclear deal, what you can basically conclude from that is you shouldn't trust the United States when it comes to negotiations and nuclear weapons and their willingness to follow through with support. Mm. So frankly, what I can tell you is that Kim Jong-un, knowing both of these things, will not give up these weapons. He won't, because there's no reason, nothing's going to help this guy if he's going to be cut and quartered and thrown in various seas around the Southeast Asia, because he will not survive it, and he knows it.
By the way, interesting, that presentation that Benjamin Netanyahu today, clearly geared at Trump. Big picture saying, look, stuff here. I mean, it was clearly he was trying to get Trump's attention to get out of the Iranian deal. But the reality is as Macron said last week, well, the deal still exists, even if the United States is not there. We're still going to have this deal, so it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. One final note here before we have to get going here. Natalia Veselnitskaya, she is the lawyer from Russia who met with Donald Jr. and Manafort and Bannon in the Trump Tower in 2016 before the election. About offering dirt on Hillary Clinton. Initially was described as a meeting about adoption, but that story came apart, especially with their own emails talking about the Hillary Clinton emails, potential of getting those. She was confronted by NBC News, who found evidence that she is actually directly tied to the Kremlin. Now, we already knew she had some pretty close Kremlin ties, but this makes it undeniable. And in a frantic moment, she admitted, yep, I'm a spy. Which changes a lot of things, at least in my mind, that the Trump Jr. and in the Trump Tower meeting was now with a Russian spy by her own admission. Talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, how does that change the dynamic of that investigation to have someone who's now admitted, oh, yeah, I was working for the other side?
Well, in the end, I think I can say with some confidence that Bob Mueller and his team actually already knew that.
Okay.
I mean, what we know right now is the very close connections that she had with Russian oligarchs who are tied directly to Vladimir Putin. And those two are running hand in hand anyway. The idea that she was arguing that she was simply a lawyer who was running independent and occasionally stepped in on behalf or played the middleman simply was inconsistent with what we've seen and frankly how the Russians operate. So what we do know is that she was involved, she was connected, she could reach all the way into the Kremlin. And I'm not suggesting how far because it's unclear. But what we do know about the Kremlin and what we do know about the Russians is nothing major happens that comes out of Russia unless Vladimir Putin wants it to happen. And so I think that's critical to understand. And remember, the real question isn't that she was trying to make this happen. She clearly was. The real question is just how much the Trump team and his son and everybody else was willing to bend over backwards to help it happen, to drive it forward, and to actually cooperate in this horrific example and a magnificent example of intelligence if you're a Russian operative, not so much if you're an American.
Oh, I'm concerned Natalia is going to have a problem with a fatal case of falling out of an eighth-story window. That seemed either that or a little, plutonium poisoning. I don't think – what's that?
A lot of things happen in Russia.
Yes, they do. She hasn't talked to the Mueller probe yet. I mean, she said she was willing to, but she hasn't talked to them yet, has she?
Not yet. The real question, I doubt that she's going to at this point. They may. You know, one last piece, if I might. You talked about what's going on right now with Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, and he just dumped a lot of statements today in the last 24 hours about the Iranian deal. The problem is that anytime you talk about the Netanyahu regime, remember, it's not the Israelis, it's the regime itself. there's a whole lot of other diverse views inside of Israel, but it's very clear that the Netanyahu regime is very specific about trying to destroy the Iranian deal, because they've always thought that it should be about more than just what the Iranians are doing with nukes, but about what they were doing with conventional weapons and in intelligence and some of the thing, other nefarious things they're doing around the world. And I think what the Germans, the Russians, the Brits and others have tried to separate those two out. Yeah, it's going to be a massive fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, and at the same time, you know, it's Benjamin Netanyahu wants the United States to fight the war with Iran for Israel because they know that that will be a mess. And so they're trying to get the U.S. to fight that war for them because they'd rather have American soldiers get killed as opposed to Israeli soldiers get killed. And I don't know how much you can trust Netanyahu, considering that's what his ultimate goal seems to be.
Well, his interest is his own country's interest, which, by the way, I understand completely. Anything that he's trying to drive, he has his own interest in doing it. The thing is that it's critically important for the Americans and others, and this probably would fit, dare I say this, into what Donald Trump has said, and it's important that he understand this. In this particular case, the Israelis' interest is not necessarily the Americans' interest. They may have certain ideas on what they should do and why, but that doesn't mean that it's in the interest of the United States, and that needs to be considered at every level, frankly, with any of our allies. That's how world politics works.
Jack Rice, travel safe to Georgia. Enjoy the wine, and we will talk to you again when you come back, okay?
Prost. Thank you, brother.
Take care. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break, come on back, talk a little bit about that, and then also a new name in the Senate race in Minnesota. We'll talk about Richard Painter trying to run as a Democrat. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.